This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. There are lots of names for the group of people born from about 1981 to 1997. Millennials, Generation Y, Echo Boomers. A survey by investment firm T. Rowe Price called them the money-conscious generation. Facing massive student loan debt and historically low wages, this generation certainly has reason to be focused on money issues. Certified financial planner Douglas Bonaparte and his wife Heather have written The Millennial Money Fix to offer millennials advice on budgeting, debt, and finding financial freedom. Douglas joins us along with Chris DeSimeo, a financial advisor with Wells Fargo Advisors in Cincinnati. And you can join us at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org or find us on Facebook or Twitter. Douglas and Chris, thank you for joining us this afternoon.
Glad to be here. Thank you.
It is always a pleasure to be here with you, Mark. And especially, I'm excited about this book. Here we are. It's September 27th. You'd never know it by the weather. It's 90 degrees
outside.
Feels
like it's July, doesn't it, Chris?
Yeah, and even the market. Yeah. The market's trying to heat up, too. I mean, the Dow has had four down days in a row. But today we're up about 17 points. The broader markets have been doing better. You know, we have to keep in mind that the Dow is just 30 stocks. And sometimes if one or two of them are having a bad day, they can drag the whole index down. But we've had a market that, as we get towards the end of the quarter, is always doing this end of the quarter window dressing or window breaking, all sorts of cross currents going on. But in a couple weeks, we'll be starting the earnings season for the third quarter, and who knows what will bring it about. But all this money talk, you know, window draking, window dressing, all this stuff, this is more important.
You're big on this idea, yeah, this whole thing of reaching millennials on this.
It's clearly important. Millennials are clearly important. First of all, there are so many of them.
Yeah.
And Douglas, you can, you may have the exact number, but the millennial generation, according to Barron's, is bigger than the baby boomers.
75 million
US. People.
In the U.S.
Yeah, and they do have
about a quarter of the population.
Right, and they have different needs. They have different attitudes. In addition to the names that Mark was talking about, they've also been dubbed the Peter Pan generation because they put off things. They put off buying a home. They put off owning cars. Our daughters, who are both in this generation, that generation, they didn't need a car. So they put off buying a car. They put off buying homes later. What have you noticed are some of the main differences, Doug, in your practice as a certified financial planner between boomers and millennials?
I think you touched on it there, which is, you know, whether you want to call it Peter Pan or just putting things off, that much is true. And I think that the financial obstacles that millennials face are drastically different than their parents, the baby boomers, primarily because of two things: student loan debt, which is tied to the high cost of college education, and because of the labor environment. Now, specifically with putting things off, we're watching a generation take what normally would be savings for those great things in life, buying homes, starting families, so on, and applying that towards basically student loan debt repayment. So it's not so much that we're choosing to, like these myths about millennials only want to be in city centers and carpool everywhere. And, you know, I kind of think that we're the same with our parents, and really more so with our grandparents, about wanting to still do these cliche Americana type dream stuff. Again, white picket fence in the suburbs. I know my wife and I found that to be what we wanted. Can't speak for everybody, but the main differences again are really financial ones. It's very different out there, and certainly the labor environment tying into that. There are far fewer guarantees today than there were before. And really, we have to kind of curate our own careers. Those traditional career paths have broken down. You know, no more pensions. Certainly disruption and creativity and the gig economy has a role to play in here as well. But millennials are not necessarily trusting, let's say, of putting 20 to 30 years in with one particular employer, you know, because there's no more gold watch and pension really waiting for them at the end, shy of, you know, dedicating your time to public service. So these are the things that are both very challenging and different than our parents, while, you know, a few things that remain the same.
Douglas, and I'm from the baby boomer generation, so I'm not so sure this tendency to put things off is completely a millennial thing, because when I was in my 20s and 30s, I sat around and thought, oh, I got plenty of time. I don't need to start saving for retirement yet. I don't need to do that till I hit my 50s. That was my line of thought.
Sure. So with maybe retirement at being a specific savings goal or financial goal, you might see those parallels. But I think the numbers, you know, plainly point to the fact that, you know, when you look at homes for the generation, which finally, you know, have picked up at the older end of the generation, and it's quite broad, 18 years from the youngest to the oldest, you know, there's tangible evidence here that we are indeed delaying these great things in life because of the financial challenges that we face, because of the greater uncertainties that are out there. There's a psychological component here as well. You know, the older end of the generation was wrapped up into the effects of 2008, and we learned what that was all about firsthand. And a lot of my clients, obviously millennials themselves, are, you know, still stigmatized and somewhat emotional about that time. It was the beginning of our careers where, you know, a lot of things didn't break out the way we thought after educating ourselves expensively, you know. And then for the younger ones who watch their parents or older siblings go through some tough times, you know, they too have that same psychological effect. So yes, I think, you know, it's easy to put a generation in a box, you know, and label them millennials. But, you know, when you were in your 20s and 30s, like when I was in my 20s and now 30s, I'm sure we had a lot more in common about our attitudes on life and the world than we, you know, than we didn't. So, of course, I think in that light, we'll find ourselves nodding our heads and being like, yeah, we shared that experience. But again, the economic realities that you faced in your 20s and 30s is drastically different than what millennials are facing today.
Yeah, Douglas, one of the things that I really enjoy about this book, The Millennial Money Fix, is that instead of being written on, you know, in the third person, it's first person. You are describing what you went through, what your wife, Heather, went through, Heather graduating with a nice amount
small
of debt.
Portion.
Yeah, a small. Yeah. Yeah, and you actually get it down to the dollars, $211,694.20 were the debt. From law school. And the timing, again, impeccable, just in time for the Great Recession. And your own bona fides in the millennial generation, how right when you got to University of Florida, you had your eyebrow pierced and it lasted 4 days. You said, couldn't stand it. But in addition to that, you have some very specific and clear-cut advice on how to get organized for just about every major topic facing not only millennials, but baby boomers and beyond, but especially given the amount of student loan debt that is trying to be absorbed or handled by millennials. You have some specific advice on getting organized in your chapter called Payback Time, on how to figure out which of these loans to pay back first and the sequence in which to do it. Can you spend a few minutes telling us, giving us some specific advice for those who are grappling with these mountains of student loan debt, how to go about tackling that problem?
It would be my pleasure. So the first thing we point to here is to get organized. And when you're taking out loans for school and let's say a four-year traditional degree, you know, the way that the federal government works and the private lenders by and large is they disperse your loans on a semester-by-semester basis. And typically each disbursement is its own loan, which doesn't make record keeping, you know, very easy for someone who is 18 to 22 years old trying to study and get their degree and might not have education in personal finance. So getting organized is essential because you might have a lot of documentation you need to gather. And the book shows you how to do this and what a table of those loans look like and what their interest rates are. What, you know, are they public or private? What status they're currently in as far as repayment? If they're public, are they subsidized or unsubsidized? So really organizing all the facets of the types of loans that you have, you can finally get a good look at what the lay of the land is for your student loan situation. From there, you're going to want to really focus on whether or not, you know, refinancing is something that's right for you or an opportunity. And by familiarizing yourself with what it is you have through that organizational process, you're going to put yourself in the position to then go out and do your research, whether or not you know, you want to stay on the federal government's balance sheet because they offer certain types of repayment plans that are flexible and might be a crutch while you're getting yourself set up. And I'm specifically talking about income-driven plans. And the book does a good job of describing how those work, what the pitfalls of those plans are, and really how they should be used. And early in Heather and I's careers and in getting our lives set up, we relied on that, knowing that, sure, the payments, or rather the outstanding balance might still be increasing, but the break that we got for not having to pay so much each month, or the impact on our cash flow, helped us do things that we needed to do in our professional careers and in our personal lives. And we're not talking about going on elaborate vacations. I mean, really getting ourselves in a position to grow professionally and personally. And then we'll get into, you know, how to go about taking opportunities to refinance your loans. What are the pros and cons of doing that? So really, it's that organizational piece that the book lays out quite nicely of how to get this all presented in a way so you can, throughout the entire book, which is make informed financial decisions for yourself. And we'll give you, of course, terminology and definitions and again, strategies on how to approach this.
Douglas, you know, you talk about goals and budgeting and becoming financially literate, which, you know, all these things are good ideas, but they sound like a lot of hard, boring, tough work. So what do you tell people? What do you say to motivate someone to get started on this?
Yeah, for, you know, there's kind of like two approaches here. The first one is, you know, let's pump them up. You know, and in my experience, there, you know, there are very few things in this world that can change your life dramatically in such a short period of time. And one of those things is financial education and financial literacy. Seriously, learning this stuff, and it's not that hard. I promise you there's much harder things to learn out there, but learning about personal finance and the contents of this book can literally help you change your life. Again, few things in the world that can have that kind of impact that quickly for free, literally for free, or I guess for the cost of the book. But you can go online and learn these things too. And the other thing is, like, I could take a more cynical approach to that is like, oh, I'm sorry. Like, I'm sorry you don't want to take the time to approach, you know, personal finance and learn these things. Like, you don't want to take control over your financial life and make informed decisions. Hey, you know, you want to put off your goals. You want to not achieve these great things. You know, that's on you. But I like the first approach better, which is certainly to build people up. But depending on who you're talking to, you might need a little tough love sometimes.
Yeah. You know, Douglas, I'm really impressed. Over the 30 years now, I've been involved in radio and interviewing authors about books. Your chapter on investing in the book, The Millennial Money Fix, 26 pages long. No charts, no graphs, none of that stuff, but just good, solid information on what a stock is, what a bond is, how to know the difference, and how to get started investing. It, you have distilled in these 26 pages everything even a baby boomer who's been putting it off needs to know about what these things are and how to look at them in a way that's useful. We've got about 3 minutes or so left. Can you tell us, what have you noticed in your practice are the main obstacles that millennials have to investing, to starting to, once they decide to save, what stops them from making good decisions?
I think the primary thing is, and we write about, I think there's a whole chapter dedicated to it, earning the right to invest, right? This is the chapter we're talking about. And I think the biggest mistake that millennials make is thinking that they have to, or that they're missing out, you know, FOMO, fear of missing out. And kind of the sexiness that investments give off. They are the sizzle of personal finance. And as a practitioner, you know, I don't, they are sexy. You know, you turn on the TV, that's what people are screaming at you. But it's just one area of personal finance. And millennials need to understand that there are a lot of other things they need to grapple and master before really investing is appropriate. Shy of matching contributions, you know, that your employer may give you if you participate in a 401k, well, you first need to know what your goals are. You need to master cash flow. More than likely, the generation has short-term cash-related savings goals, building cash reserves, saving for a down payment on a house. extending cash reserves because you're expecting your family or starting a business. Very rarely do we get outside of these goals, which are non-investment related. And the tasks of building discipline and understanding yourself, and being honest with your financial situation, that is the vast majority of the work we want young people or anybody really to put into their financial world. And then, and only then, comes investments, which is, you know, why the entire industry right now, financial services industry, is going through some shifting pains away from investment management as being the primary thing that, you know, is being talked about, and into value-driven financial advice and financial planning. This book is your primer for comprehensive financial planning. This is what every person deserves to have so that they can go out there and, again, make informed financial decisions and achieve the great things in life.
So what would be your top piece of advice here, Douglas? Just do it like the Nike commercial? Just get started?
Yeah, you know, no excuses here. Think about what it is you want in this world and then go after it with passion, you know, with fire in your belly. Nobody's going to do this for you. It has to be done on your own. The only magic bullet the only magic bullet I've ever known is hard work. So you pair hard work with knowledge and the organization around these things, and you're going to find yourself in really an advantageous situation. And I would think you're going to do better than not.
Douglas and Chris, thank you for joining us this afternoon.
You're very welcome.
Welcome.
Certified financial planner Douglas Bonaparte, co-author of The Millennial Money Fix, and Chris DeSimio, a financial advisor with Wells Fargo Advisors in Cincinnati. Listeners are reminded the information provided on the show is general in nature and may not apply to your personal investment situation.